Hi, this is Terry Manning, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC Acre.
Next time you find yourself using a rideshare, make it more interesting. Ask the driver to put on 90.7 FM, WGXC Acre, radio for open ears.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Indian Law Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Green County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Green County, the Alexander and Marjorie Hooker Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, providing critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Episode of the Inhuman City. This is WGXC 90.7 FM community radio in the Hudson Valley, and this is a monthly program that you hear on Sunday evenings, the third Sunday of the month. And this is a program today that we'll call University of the Waves. I'm calling it that because I'm going to play some excerpts from a documentary about sound artist and composer John Cousins. And some other things are on that. For example, coming up next shortly, play something from David Berman along with Paul DeMarini's Fern Friedman and Clinton Smith and others. Something that I haven't gotten out of my ear all week, called the Archetypal Unitarist Seminar. Hope you enjoy it. So this is Indian City again, and I hope you stick with these sounds for the next hour. So stay tuned.
Thank you. saw the coast, solely as it is, a natural entity, water, land and climate, all working as part of an environment which I take absolutely for granted, with no aesthetic or philosophical overlay, just as a thing. And I felt a slight tremor at the back of my mind, a kind of shiver of recognition, saying that this was the real secret, that reality, what we perceive with our physical senses, is all there is, and there's nothing below or beyond. I think it was a glimpse of what it must be like to truly let go of one's own personal point of view of the world and see it and yourself objectively as something from which you are a part, but to which you simultaneously belong. It was like really getting outside of myself, or else getting fully inside of what I was seeing. It wasn't an aesthetic appreciation, more a sort of relaxing into a state of neutrality concerning it and me. Somehow letting go of my feelings about it and just acknowledging it as being there. Just a hint, like a fragile odour immediately gone, or a mirage, or some kind of ghost sound which leaves you wondering if you've heard it at all. Somehow this resonates in the area of the sonic work I'm engaged with at the moment, Songs for the Little Lady, linked into the necessity of sensing the psychoacoustic aura of the sounds I'm using, particularly the signs, children, water, wind, breath, the concertina, tree squeaks, etc. Sounds of the environment act upon us in deep ways, mostly below our ability to recognize or describe. They exist in a pragmatic reality, exhibit ordered parameters, and are produced by and within a dispassionate context. Usual momentary dropouts and panic attacks, but today, almost a week into our stay, I feel the old anchor bedding in and the atavistic undertow of the place doing its work. Don't know what it is I learn here, but it seems no matter how I change, the lessons continue. P.S. Nearly all the large stones in the area around the river mouth have been covered with sand. 18th of January, 95. Last night was a full moon in a totally clear sky. I piled some stones into Goldsworthian balanced spires in the riverbed at low tide and waited for the incoming tide to put them back with their fellows. Turned out the rising moon coincided with the rising tide and produced exceptional silhouettes on the shining moon's pathway upon the river water. Tried to photograph these. Let's hope they say something unique and transcend being merely imitation Goldsworthies.
Last night my alien tones turned bad on me. And I got this ringing sound in my head, which wouldn't go away. And it was, these are alien tones. And I realised that there is a negative polarity to the taking up of these natural sounds and using them for one's own personal expressive gain. It's almost as though there's a danger in that. There's a danger in sort of covertly co-opting, and maybe there's a danger in the whole business of what I'm trying to do with the sounds of the environment. co-opted with him. I think I need to think a bit about that. Well, it's not really the act of the co-opting, the attitude of Chris doing it.
20th of January, 1905. Worked in one of the South Stone Bays as the tide was coming in. Firstly tried working in a visually prescribed area of stones, slowly placing stones on top of the adjacent. Looked interesting, but it's not too costly. Then I tried following my shadow in the high tide area of the sea, marking the position of my head, spotting the ground at the location of the shadow, and making enough clean, using only the stones on the beach for the position. I did this quite fast and produced a line of about 7 cairns running obliquely from a sandstone outcrop to the incoming sea. The cairns worked better than the single upturned stones. They also were much more visible, and because they were rearranged stones from that particular spot, made more sense to me. The tide then came in and very quickly took the cairns back into their natural pattern of distribution. I now want to make an azimuth curve of cairns in a few days when dawn will occur at low tide. Documented on slide film. Note, this was a breakthrough because it's so obvious and makes a much clearer statement by rearranging a number of stones from a designated area chosen by the azimuth method. The single upended stone or balanced cairn is aesthetically much more arresting but doesn't speak as clearly about the process of rearrangement. The beauty of the upended stone leads one too much away from the significance of its altered position towards its aesthetic impact. It's the alteration of position, however, which is the whole point of the procedure. The roughness and blatant instability of these latest cairns resonates with the random patterning produced by the sea and hence works more successfully as a statement about relocation. 22nd of January, 1995. Discussed this morning with Colin the need to clarify my family tree and realise that all I need do is claim this knowledge. All I have to do is search, ask questions, etc. and I can name names, faces and in some cases, histories and personalities. Low tide. Started by squatting and circling an area in the sand with my outstretched arm. Then gathered all visible stones on the surface of the circle into a central cairn. Then moved forward and made an adjacent circle and repeated the process. Did this until I reached an impassable obstacle. The ideal way of finding direction should be by the azimuth method. Had a very strong intimation that all of the available stones were analogous to people, all the people of the world. I was using the rotation of the earth for direction and my own physical anatomy as a scale indicator to choose certain groups of stones to be rearranged under those parameters. Rather than by the parameters of tidal effect. The work represents repeated attempts to define a place and ground for viewing the world. Each circle with its central cairn of relocated stones set in a larger environment of seemingly randomly dispersed stones articulates its own.
Just checking in to remind you, you're listening to the Evening City here at WGXC 90.7 FM. Hudson, Acre, Catskill, here in Green and Columbia counties in the Hudson Valley. You've been hearing some things from David Berman, John Cousins, Cam, Moondog, Sir Richard Bishop, Kraftwerk, and some things that might have snuck in there in between. For another 20 minutes or so, and we'll continue with this work. Stay tuned for the rest of this program, and then following this show will be Music of Recent Centuries. All of this coming to you live every month on WGXC, the greatest radio station.
4, rate of travel, 5, size of suit, 6, which stones to move, are all integrated as much as possible by obeying laws or givens outside of the subjective aesthetic preferences of the person performing the task. 1. The site, a tabula rasa, an area of ground as unmarked as possible by previous human activity. 2. Start and end points, natural features of the site which make axiomatic sense, for example, river, seashore, cliff face, etc. Essentially, an impassable topographical obstacle of some kind. 3. Direction, following the shadow, the azimuth method. 4. Rate of travel, controlled entirely by the task, in this case, how long it takes me to gather all of the available stones in the prescribed area. 5. Size of the circle, established using my physical proportions, a given belonging to me. 6. Which stones? Only those visible on the surface and inside the circle. Size of the search area, produced by my body proportion. Location of the search area, shadow and body combined. The beginning time for the task is very important. It should begin as soon as shadow is available on the site. All other time parameters should be decided by this. That is, undertake the task when the chosen site is cleared by the tide at dawn or at earliest time of available shadow. The circle is the prescribed search area. The stones are the individuals available, findable within the area. Of course, they're just the surface stones, and one knows that underneath them lie all of the other individuals, which, although destined to be unrecognized at this time, provide the foundation for those above. The establishing of these kinds of empirical parameters within which the work can function gives a sense of inevitability and a kind of destined certainty to the task. Hence, the finding and recognizing of the individual stones, which is at one level random, is ordered and given credibility by the rationale of how, why, and when the task is undertaken. At another level, it gives the entire work a sense of unstoppable inevitability, similar to the momentum of tidal and terrestrial movement. Watching a stone moved by the tide. It may be displaced a great deal, or only very slightly, but whenever the tide recedes, the stone seems to be in an inevitable position, one which it has long inhabited. Every time it's dislodged, it always reintegrates with its environment. This is brought about by the integrative power of the dislodging medium, the sea, and by the ability of the material around the stone, the sand, to reflect the fluid dynamics produced by the seawater inundating the stone. The sand is an ideal physical environment for formal integration of the stone's many and varied positions during the tidal cycle. 23rd of January 95. Wet. Out to Takaka to buy film stock and treat ourselves to a cooked breakfast. Back in the afternoon to a very wet camp and ripped outrigger roof due to the weight of accumulated water. Temporary repairs and then to a very damp bed, not much sleep. 24th of January 95. Up before dawn, not sleeping, to a moon in a misty sky and dawn just beginning to arrive. Very still. Recorded 10 minutes of high tide surf from low down on the ground. Cuts out the highs and seems to highlight the slowly altering lower frequencies. Then down to the river mouth, and what a find! Residual tidal surges in a totally still and otherwise quiet ambience. Rushed back to get the gear and set up on a convenient log very close to the river. Took 3 complete takes of the next 3 surges. Hope they're okay, as the detail was magical. The usual surprises, like a curious vocal seagull, and in the last take, the beginnings of the dawn chorus. I then wandered on the beach as the tide receded and photographed my usual heaps of light and dark markings left by the water and watched the rising sun struggle to dissolve the sea mist. Still a very heavy surf, but better behaved than yesterday's killer. Might try to wave ski when the tide is low. While recording, I realised there are time windows for making recordings as well as for doing visual stuff. This morning the high tide happened just before dawn, and so there were no bird sounds and the air was still, a perfect time to record and a perfect subject available, tidal surges. Such a complete event, a tidal surf. Begins with the low drone of the surf, no detail, and hardly any other sounds, no oral cues of the river. Then the surge enters and generates an extraordinarily complex image of growing energetic movement, very dynamic, and with the sound events ever closer and more detailed, panning left to right all the time. It peaks with a full spectral and spatial spread, and then releases quite quickly back into distant drone. Displays the usual exponential curve, which seems to accompany most natural sonic gestures. Marvellous thing is that although the sound is instantly recognisable as water, and probably as seawater, the entire event retains a wonderfully abstract quality, being at the same time a recognisable source, water, and pure sound, form and function in perfect complementation. Note, the psychoacoustic effect on the listener is one of an inevitable event, something emerging, reaching fullness, and then lapsing back. Implies a strong sense of cyclic organic power, quite menacing, but also resonating with achieved fullness. Very Laurentian. Can't forgive myself for leaving the phones behind and not bringing more batteries. Chances for recordings like these are so rare. When will I learn? Shows just how tired I was at the end of last year. Oh, how I hope these recordings are okay. It occurred to me the strong link between the completeness of the aural effect of the tidal surges and the visual integration achieved when the tide reclaims a stone. Both are intensely integrated events. More and more, it seems that merely recording them orally and visually is all that is necessary to create a powerful, expressive image for the senses of a human being. A sun will rise in me. I shall slowly resurrect. Already the whiteness of false dawn is on my inner ocean. A sun in me. And a sun in heaven. And beyond that, the immense sun behind the sun of immense distances that fold themselves together within the genitals of living space. And further, the sun within the atom, which is God in the atom. Late morning, wave skied while the tide was a party. Some very well-formed breaks both sides. Glassy sea, low, soft cloud and sea mist, with sun whirling everything through it. Nobody here except us. Dug a new latrine. Seems we go through one hole for a week. Colleen has devoured three books already, including the quite long and arduous Tarkovsky Diary.
I spent quite a lot of time with them, so doing what I did on the other tape, making the same thing. Not looking well in my ears, but sitting up close, and singing the fundamentals when they were playing the harmonics, and also pressing my fingers in my ears slightly so that the bass harmonic note would reverberate in my head, but the harmonics from the harps still penetrated my ears every bit as well as when I didn't have my fingers in them, which I found quite strange. It's the pure tones, I think. Anyway, then I went for my walk and I found I just couldn't get these sounds out of my head. The sea and the whole environment seemed to be droning on this fundamental note. And I started wandering around the flats